Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Okay, we'll still send it code 3.
Did you just touch my drum set?
Hey, knock it off!
Derek Kramer.
You sound insane. Do you realize that? You should be medicated.
Zach Jones.
You, Brennan. I know you touched my drum set, and I want to hear that dirty little mouth admit it.
Kramer.
Out of my face.
Jones.
That's because you touched my drum set, because I know cops doesn't start till 4.
Kramer and Jones on WGR Sports Radio 550.
You heard it there. Cops doesn't start till 4. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, though. We're on from 1 to 3 today, filling in for One Bills Live as Bills head on to the bye week. Had a fun sports night last night, didn't we?
First of all, it was this summer's favorite buddy cop.
It was this summer's favorite buddy cop. We're finally now starting to have fall weather, middle of October.
Yep.
So now
we've been extended to the fall.
Exactly. the nice weather has continued.
By the way, yes, we had ourselves
a great sports night last night.
Especially for me, personally.
Right.
Because once again, I'm going to go back to blaming Christopher Columbus because obviously Columbus Day, everything stunk. The Sabres stunk. The Blue Jays stunk. The Bills stunk. Everything stunk. Not a real holiday. Put everyone back to work.
Right.
That is now my new stance on that day.
Did not work. Try again.
I blame that fraud. And I'm glad that the day is being taken away from him even too. Like, fraud. Fraudulent. And anyone that plays on that day rues the day. And then, just on a simple Wednesday night, Blue Jays bats get back at it. Mm-hmm. 5 home runs in the game. Make it a series.
Yo, they play tonight.
Play again tonight. Make it a series. Put it at 2. And then there is the Sabres, who took all, and I mean all, of their frustrations from the first 3 games out on the Ottawa Senators.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever that goaltender's name was.
I felt bad pretty early in that game. We'll get more to the Sabres, but I felt bad pretty early into that game. I was watching it with Owen Parker up in the press box, and we're both just like, man, they're just firing every shot at him, and any clean look was going in.
And it continued. They had 4 in the first period.
Yeah, it continued. I mean, they just, any clean look, second period on, was just going in. Sabres play again on Saturday, also at home. Florida coming to town. A lot of injuries there. 1 o'clock puck drop. We'll get more into the Sabres, Jays as well, because that was a great game for them last night. 13-4 win over the Mariners. It didn't start perfect for them either, but it got to their side very quickly. But we'll start today with the Bills, and I heard our morning show talking about it, and I know it's on a lot of people's minds and where they're at being 4-2. They've lost two in a row again for the 95th straight year. And, you know, is the sky falling? Is this going to be a problem, you know, going forward into January? And it may. I'm not here to say that I'm somebody that's all of a sudden, you know, smelling the roses going, guys, they're going to be just fine. They probably will in terms of the playoffs. They're probably going to make the playoffs again.
Right.
This team goes on runs in very positive ways towards the middle end of the season. They are very, very good, especially off the bye as well. So I fully anticipate that they will beat Carolina off the bye week. They're going to be a little bit healthier. They're going to get suspended guys back. It'll be great.
Right.
But looking ahead to the rest of the season, where do the Bills need to improve? Derek, we've talked about it on the Extra Point Show. I've talked about it on the Nightcap as well, of just what's the things you can hide and what's the things you have to live with. Personally, for me, I think in the modern NFL, I wonder if you can live with the defense. You can live with a defense that is just not good against the run, that is going to get gashed every now and then. But maybe with some returning pieces, guys also we maybe haven't even seen at all, depending on if you've watched many Rams or Steelers games with Hoyt and Ogunjobi, maybe they are going to mean a lot to them. Max Harrison, I know signs are starting to point to, hey, maybe his practice window is going to be opening up, especially during the bye week. Maybe that's going to help bring him along a little bit faster. I wonder if you can sort of live with the defense being as bad as it is. I wonder, though, if you can hide your offense not really having outside wide receivers, boundary wide receivers that can stretch the field, make a defense honest.
And I am starting to wonder, like the talent at the wide receiver position is one thing. I am starting to wonder if scheme has a lot more to do with the outside receivers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to actually become curious of this because, yes, the receivers are not getting open. But also, I look at teams with worse wide receiver cores than Buffalo's, scheming players open. I've got the Chiefs before Worthy's healthy. I've got Tyquan Thornton getting open downfield.
Yeah, and being a real factor for them for a few weeks there.
A player that the Patriots said, nah, we're good. After like, what, three seasons? Less than?
I think so, maybe.
I see teams scheming wide receivers open. And I don't see it with Buffalo. I think that that offense is so predicated on efficiency, efficiency, efficiency. First downs are more important than anything else. That you're not getting the field flip type play. Unless no. It's yards after catch.
And I fought a little bit against the scheming open and stuff like that, especially the first 4 weeks, because I'm like, it's September.
Right.
I don't want to show everything. I don't want them playing their best football right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, look, it's great that the Colts are what they are if you're a Colts fan, but I imagine there's probably some of their fan base going, are we starting too hot? Is it all too perfect too early? And you start to fall off. You know, the Saints last year was mm-hmm. this. But now as we've gone on and now they've lost two in a row and the offense hasn't looked good. It's looked worse from going to New England
right.
to Atlanta. You do wonder about that. There doesn't seem to be that easy play that Allen just dump off and go, right? Where I even wonder, though, too, if Allen plays into it a little bit because I'm going to bring this up. But like the wheel route concepts that they use for James Cook. I think there was definitely one, but there may have even been two situations in the Atlanta game alone. Allen could have thrown that ball and doesn't.
Right.
And, of course, with how blitz-heavy Atlanta was, he's on his back fast. And that was a problem. But also, yeah, like no one's getting schemed open. You're not seeing Khalil Shakir being that outlet that Allen could dump off and go, and we're still gaining yards. Or even the pushing the ball down the field. I feel like we haven't seen guys wide open mm-hmm. since the fourth quarter of Baltimore.
And that is, they're playing so far off on you that there are going to be players open because the last thing they want is to get beat deep in a game where you're trying to protect a lead.
Yeah, that very quickly became, this is garbage time, this is garbage time, this is garbage time. Oh, no, you lost.
Or the other side of that is clearly Baltimore has problems,
mm-hmm.
which is also something that has been displayed throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind saying that Josh has been a little gun-shy in that sense. I don't mind saying that the quarterback has not been playing as particularly well as he usually does. And it's okay to say that. But I think it's a combination of a lot of things. And I'm wondering if Brady's scheme does have more to say about why the wide receivers do struggle on the outside. Because the system doesn't really predicate it. Or it's about short routes on the outside. And it's not about stretching opponents down there and making them honest.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that that's what that is. I think this is, it's quite frankly, a team that wants to predicate efficiency over everything. And I look at one player and I start to wonder what was really going to end up going on here. It was Stephon Diggs. Brady takes over halfway through that year where it's Diggs' last season. They still obviously have to run a lot of the concepts of Dorsey's playbook. It's too late for a full install. And there's obviously still deep shots in there.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, the deep shots are gone. Diggs forces his way out of Buffalo, though, and I'm starting to wonder if it has to do with the fact that Joe Brady's offense does not emphasize productivity on the outside by a boundary receiver. Because the only other time I've seen Stephon Diggs force his way out of a team is scheme-based. So I think he knew that Joe Brady's scheme wasn't going to mesh with him, and he forced his way out because of that.
And the way the team was going, it does work into the – it was a mutual parting because, well, the Bills' offense was going to where it was going to go.
And, so, yeah, we're not going to really worry about paying you that much to be here if you're not going to end up being productive.
To the level that you already were. I will say I don't think the offense is horrifically broken. I mean, they were down Dalton Kincaid and they were down Josh Palmer very early in that game. And Palmer does get the one big play that many of us have been clamoring for early in that contest. My problem is, though, is like last year, the offense is a house of cards.
Mm-hmm.
They struggle last year on offense in the middle of the year. Why? Shakir goes down. He goes down. He picks up his injury like middle part or third quarter of the Baltimore game. Then he misses the Houston game, and that's where it's a disaster.
Right.
That's when it all of a sudden is like, oh no, okay, they need to add somebody because they lose one guy, and it all falls apart.
But look at who those guys are.
Mm-hmm.
Each year now, it's Shakir, and now it's Kincaid.
Mm-hmm.
Players up the middle. It's not the boundary.
It's not the boundary, guys.
It's not the boundary. Because this offense doesn't emphasize the boundary. The best you get is those pre-planned fade routes that...
I mean, those make you question, too, the efficiency level of the offense. Of like, why are you going to these 50-50 balls with Keon that ultimately aren't 50-50? He's not coming down with them enough.
Right. And he's had a better time when it comes to, like, fighting for space against things, but it's not a 50-50 fade ball.
Mm-hmm.
Fade balls, by the way, are the trend that need to die next.
I mean, just across the sport.
Yes, across football. One day we will get rid of fade balls. But today is not that day. But I am starting to wonder how much of the wide receiver issues, quote unquote, that we've waxed poetic about on this station. How much of it is truly about the talent itself as well? And how much of it is actually the offense that Joe Brady's running? Because remember, I brought up Diggs.
Mm-hmm.
His productivity goes in the tank when Dorsey gets fired.
It does dip. I mean, I'll never forget having the conversation the day he is traded of, like, do the Bills still believe in him as a number one receiver? I thought they did. They then trade him like 20 minutes after that conversation, you know, had started. But
the fact that he was fine in Houston before his injury.
That was a conversation. And yeah, he was fine with Houston.
He's doing well in New England after the injury.
Yep. And by the way, he should have had another big game against New Orleans too. It's barely a push-off that they call.
Yeah.
I mean, I know his Bills fans are probably happy that didn't happen, but he was on track to have three straight really big games for New England and making you think that, all right, they're popping. And I think they are. They have a lack of talent, but right now things are just going well. I think it's something too, and the Atlanta game is while it's in the rearview mirror, it is the encapsulation of like everything we had been seeing, right? Like you lose a divisional game to New England, but it's a divisional game. It's a rising team, what have you. Atlanta's Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. They lose 30-0 to Carolina, but then they have all this talent, right? You know, now all of a sudden they're the class of the NFC. Well, not really. They tried to give that game away multiple times. Penix nearly throws a pick six to Shaq Thompson at the end of the game when Buffalo just could not get out of the mud. I think really what you saw is just the frustration from the Bills. Allen especially looked very frustrated on the sideline and slamming his helmet down on the bench and just the body language for the whole team didn't look good.
And the biggest frustrations are still going to be from that game, the offense. And it has to be. Like, yeah, the defense gave up, like, what was it, like 340-some-odd yards in the first half alone?
Yeah.
Which is terrifying stuff. And almost gave up another touchdown, if not for Drake London just being out of bounds.
Mm-hmm.
But the defense in the second half gave you all they had. As injured as they were, you mentioned it. There's almost a pick six in that. All of a sudden, it's a tie game.
It would have been a tie game late.
Late. Yeah. So, but I still look at that going, say they do get the pick six, right? But Atlanta does get down the field again and they get a field goal because the defense is just, you know, gassed at that point. I still look at the offense go, y'all scored 14 points.
Mm-hmm.
What gives? And I think part of the problem also was something that I was not sure about through the first couple of games. The offensive line has not played as well as it did last year. As a matter of fact, against Atlanta, it seemed like they didn't know what a blitz was.
Going against a team that at that point had blitzed the most in the NFL. Like
and that, they stayed true to it.
That was their whole thing, is that they were going to blitz the hell out of you, and you had to figure it out. And look, I mean, it's not like that every blitz got through. They picked up a few of them. But there was never an outlet for Allen to go to. The offensive line was giving up free rushers constantly. It just, again, the whole thing just kind of encapsulated like maybe all the problems we've all had this year with them, where the defense is getting gouged left, right, and center. Bijan's just flying around the field. Drake London might just be a ghost. No one can seem to find him, and he's just catching the pass out of nowhere. And then the offense. They could not get it going. Yes, they have the big play to Josh Palmer, but the moment he's out of the game, you know, your second-round receiver couldn't break out. You're not seeing Shakir, who really maybe should have been the guy to pop off, especially with Billy Bowman. He was out that game. They had a backup nickel corner and couldn't really do too much. And you even were able to get James Cook going, which I think is maybe the most concerning thing, because following the New England game, you could at least argue, okay, yeah, but the offense moves through Cook. If Cook's going, they're fine. Cook in the second half, they get going. It didn't change anything.
It didn't change anything.
It didn't change anything. They could not score. That was a game for no reason, but they couldn't score. They couldn't punish Atlanta for not finishing. Atlanta ultimately does not have the dog in them to finish that game.
No.
Buffalo just on that Monday night had less of one.
And it had to do with, again, the defense in the second half gave you everything they had. Eventually it breaks with that field goal to end it. But that's it. That's all they gave up in the entirety of the second half. Yeah, they put you in a hole, but they were the ones trying to drag you out of it.
Mm-hmm.
14 points in the NFL these days rarely gets you a win. You have to face current state Baltimore without Lamar Jackson in order to get 14 points to get away with it. You have to be facing Cleveland for 14 points to be able to get away with it.
Mm-hmm. And I think for many, like this is the point to look at of like even the last two playoff losses, is that you did have the ball at the end of the game to try to win it with Josh Allen at quarterback, and two straight years you couldn't get it done. It's not like the defense played out of its mind; they played very poorly.
But they had timely stops.
They were able to get the offense the ball back with a chance to win the game or take the lead. And both times they couldn't. And I think that's where a lot of people still even looked at it, and even with the Brandon Bean comments and even going into the draft, where it was fully acknowledged they needed to improve the defense. And it should be noted that Deion Walker looks to be a smash success as a fourth-round pick, not just being good for a fourth-rounder, but being just flat-out awesome as a rookie. This is why people were still clamoring to go draft somebody like a Jalen Royals in round 3 or 4, is because late in games – in the playoffs,
When you get the opportunity with your all-star quarterback, the MVP of the league, they couldn't score. And on Monday night, and even New England that Sunday night, they couldn't score.
It is the fact that there's a non-zero chance that we have to bring up Gabe Davis at some point during this year.
Mm-hmm.
That should tell you enough of what is going on.
And that it actually would be a positive. That it actually would be a boon for the offense.
Yes.
That's not a good spot to be in. No disrespect to Gabe, but he's not also a separation artist either.
But
he at least is going to you know go down the field.
The Bills' depth chart at the position is, I'd call interesting at this point. There's no top-heavy player, and the everybody eats mantra is there. But again, I'm not going to go ahead and pretend to know what that means anymore. I'm not. Because when you have a game like this, you're eating Necco wafers. And nobody likes Necco wafers.
No.
If you like Necco wafers, I'm sorry, but I do not trust you.
That's your cross to bear, man. Not mine.
I'm just going to say that right now.
Yeah.
I don't trust you. You could be a good person, but I don't trust you. You could be a great person, but your taste buds are lying to you. Anyway. But there's a lot of issues with this offense. It does seem. And while they scored 31 against New Orleans, or it was 30 and 31, sorry, against New Orleans and Miami, though. And it's not clean, though. They started showing these issues. And I think that now I'm going to a point where yes, talent is an issue, but I think defense is where it's really the biggest problem. I am starting to wonder about scheme. I don't think this is a Bobby Slowick situation where Brady's going to go from a head coaching favorite candidate to getting fired.
Right.
But I am starting to think there are things that he could be doing schematically to let things get better. Keon Coleman's having struggles on the boundary. Put him in the slot sometimes.
Eric Wood joined Shelton Bulldog, and I think he also said this on One Bills Live yesterday as well, but like he wants to see that, where it's just move them around. See what you got in them.
Move all of them around.
Yeah.
Like, I know that Shakir's strongest in the slot. Move him around. Move everybody around. Put Keon Coleman in the slot. Like, Shakir does move around. Shakir's on different positions of the field at any notice because he is versatile like that. Can I see if Coleman is? Or are you putting your feet in the ground, puffing your cheeks out and holding your breath about, no, he's an X receiver. He's a boundary guy. When the tape shows you that at Florida State, he did a good amount of damage in the slot too.
I mean, most draft experts had it that his best role in the NFL would be as a big slot. I'll also say, and this is something that, you know, a few weeks ago, even like last week going in, I still have some faith in Keon Coleman. He is a very good athlete, and there are pop plays.
Right.
But it should also be known that following that fourth quarter pop from him, I think in the last five games, he has 125 total yards receiving.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detecttheSOS.com today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
I mean, He's kind of just doing nothing for you. He might be a great blocker, and that's something, but in terms of actually being a wide receiver and helping the passing game, since that fourth quarter against Baltimore, he's been a complete non-factor.
And that's the tough part.
And he's your second round receiver. Like, that's the highest you've drafted a receiver with Brandon Bean, because Zay Jones is McDermott's pick.
Right. That's the highest asset you've spent on that. And for some teams, it's not about the round sometimes. Puka Nacua.
Right.
I look at the Green Bay Packers. They have a good offense without a top tier wide receiver, but it could be better.
Well, Green Bay is sort of the model of just keep throwing assets at it, though.
But they keep throwing assets at it.
I mean, eventually Matthew Golden is the first round pick at wide receiver, but before that it's a bunch of second and third round picks and stuff like that to just keep it going, keep the cookie jar full.
They keep going back to it to see if they do find something.
I just, for me, ultimately, and the way I look at it is, I think they could fix their offense with an addition of a Rashid Shaheed. Or even a Chris Olave, if you really want to do that. I worry, though, about his health. I think you can fix the offense enough. You can put a Band-Aid on it and it not fall off when you jump in the water sort of deal with those additions. The defense, I just don't know if you can salvage that unit and make it kind of like Baltimore last year.
Yep.
Where they go from bottom five to top five, the flip of a switch, because they move Kyle Hamilton down at safety. I don't think you can necessarily do that. It'll be interesting to see what, a healthy Max Harrison and Michael Hoyt being. Maybe that's true. But right now, I don't think you can. I think you can salvage the offense, and I think adding someone with the skill set of a Rashid Shaheed or a Chris Olave or a Jacoby Myers might do that for you.
I will say my one pushback on wide receiver being a priority with the trade deadline is that position is not on my top priority. And when it comes to a deadline acquisition, it's safety.
And that's the thing is probably the most dire ones are defense. My problem is when you all of a sudden get like your first, second, third need, we can't salvage this.
But you mentioned how Baltimore fixed their defense last year. Has to do with safety.
Right. maybe it's the same thing.
Maybe it's the same thing. And I started saying, unironically, a couple of weeks ago, if Taylor Rapp keeps playing the way that he is, I'm going to start wanting like Damar Hamlin back in the lineup, because Rapp had been playing that poorly. Right now, I get Jordan Poyer and I will like it. And honestly, fine. Rapp has been playing that poorly that I am like kind of shrugging my shoulders and going, yeah, okay. Because 9 is late to every play.
And every play.
And he is not even bringing the hard-hitting style anymore. I think he is recognizing that he's hurting people with his recklessness, and it's changed him as a player. That recklessness made him better than what he is this year.
It made him somewhat valuable.
It made him somewhat valuable, but it made him also extremely dangerous.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now I've got a guy who just does not get to plays on time. And he's missing tackles a lot. On a team that misses a lot of tackles.
On a team that misses a lot of tackles.
On a team that misses a lot of tackles. I can name any player and I will say they've missed a lot of tackles. Cole Bishop missed a lot of tackles. Terrell Bernard missed a lot of tackles. Taylor Rapp missed a lot of tackles. Trey Wright missed a lot of tackles.
But he is sort of the guy to look at for that.
I trust two players on this defense right now. Two. And they play the same position. Ed Oliver and Deion Walker. Especially when the two of them had to play 80% of the snaps on Monday night. To play as well as they did. Like, yeah, of course, they got gashed in the run. But if you're able to take care of the two of them and get your run fits, second level, no faith. Not right now.
No, not right now. 803-0550, the number to call. What do you want to see the Bills do as the trade deadline nears? It is the start of November. I believe it's November 4th. Around this time last year, the Bills did add Amari Cooper. Is that something they've got to do again? Is it on the defense? Love to hear your thoughts. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, filling in for One Bills Live today and tomorrow. And this is WGR.
I'd like to see them move Keon around more. See what you got in him. I mean, I'm not saying take all of Shakir's slot reps away, but move him around so he's not just getting stuck on the team's number one cornerback on the opposite side and then throwing him kind of 50-50 balls along the sideline. I'd like to see him involved more, whether it's motion or similar to the first play of the game where we throw it to Palmer off of play action. I'd like to see that be Keon on those routes just to see what we got.
Eric Wood yesterday with Shope and the Bulldog. He also made that point yesterday as well on One Bills Live. It's something I can agree with. I've gotten to a point now, Derek, and Zach Jones, Derek Kramer filling in here for One Bills Live today and tomorrow. I've gotten to a point, though, with those 50-50 balls down the sideline, when one inevitably hits again, because it will, there's going to be a limited level of excitement. Knowing that, guys, it's not fixing the problem, right? A broken clock is right twice a day.
Right.
I'm not saying it's all Keon's fault or what have you. It's just he's blanketed a lot of time in this coverage. It's not a highly efficient play in an offense that predicates itself on being efficient. You know, let's not take penalties, and that's been its own issue as well. But that's their main go-to play for their second-round pick at wide receiver in his second year. After, by the way, all reports from camp were he was starting to stack great practices and look great. And then also in that fourth quarter against Baltimore, he looked very good. It's just – it seems like they've gone away. I know tape showed there was at 1.2 when the Bills were not beating the blitz. Keon is wide open down the field for what was going to be like a 25-yard gain. He's in the middle of the field. It looks great. Just Allen never sees him because of the blitz. But they do need to move Keon around just to get him going. Because I think there is a player in there, but it is not what they want him to be.
Funny thing that you mention it like that. For me, when that next fade hits, like I'm going to hate it, but it's also going to hit like –
oh, right. Ooh, yeah. It's going to be one of those things like 10 minutes later, I'll be like, we're still doing that.
But also, I'm going to be like, but it's so cool.
Right.
Like watching him get up and get the football, like that would be the part where I'm just like, but he's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
But that play stinks, but he's so cool. Like, that's the part, like, I'm the opposite of you. Like, I'm not really going to have much questions about it. I'm just going to be like, yo, that's really fun watching Keon Coleman go up and get it.
Do good things. 803-0550, the number to call. Let's get connected to our fans. It's brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We'll start off today with Jerry on the line. Jerry, how we doing? Jerry, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
There we go.
How we doing?
Good. I hate the term 50-50 ball, because would you ever play a quarterback that only completes 50%?
That's absolutely correct. It's absolutely correct.
What are you talking about? Anthony Richardson's fine.
I go back to like 1960s QB stats. I'm like, what are we doing here? It's a different league. I get it. But man, oh.
Regardless of the spot of the ball last year in the championship game or 13 seconds or any of it, the thing that really bothers me, and it filters into this year a little bit, that last drive last year in the conference championship game, when you have three and a half minutes left and three timeouts and Cook is not on the field and the reason you use is he's not our third down back, you should be running your normal offense with 3.5 minutes left and three timeouts. That's the ability to run 14 plays.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you thinking it's a third down offense? How smart are they? Is Joe Brady? How smart is Sean McDermott? If you think that you need to, with 3.5 minutes left and 3 timeouts, not be running your normal offense.
No, yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing, Jerry. I think you're right on that. They're changing too much, right? Like, in the end, all of a sudden, we're going to get too cute. That's been a conversation that's been going around where all of a sudden—
It's kind of been a thing lately.
Right, where all of a sudden now we're going to take, I think, and arguably, their best skill position player off the field because it's third down, right, and we want him in pass blocking. I think most people now have gotten to that point with James Cook especially is— He's their best player, and he's constantly doing great things. Why would you not give him the ball more? You're paying him 4 years, $48 million. Why is he not being used more? My frustration with Cook's usage has been the lack of just even involving him at all in the passing game the last 2 weeks. He has one target through 2 weeks.
And I would be concerned about Cook in that in particular, if not for the fact that Ty Johnson's also not getting targeted.
No, it's been the James Cook show. Ray Davis has what, two plays on Sunday, one of which is a touchdown. Don't get me wrong, but he's been a non-factor. My thing is,
I'm more or less looking at the entire season.
But if it's James Cook's backfield, let it be James Cook's backfield. Don't play around with this. Where all of a sudden, at this point now, when Ty Johnson's in the game, they kind of know he's not going to carry the ball.
But also, Johnson has been thrown to 7 times. He has 2 catches this year. Is there that much of a drop-off between Cook and Johnson based on the productivity that Ty Johnson's giving you this year in the passing game? I'm going to say probably not. So, yeah, have Cook in for the big moments. Why? Because you can at least threaten with James Cook, the breakaway speed and the big playmaking ability. You can do it. And honestly, I think James Cook has kind of solved the dropsies issue. A little bit.
Well, I mean, at least up to this year, like, he's been fine.
This year's been good, as a matter of fact.
No issues. The first game of the year, he doesn't really do anything rushing the ball. It's receiving. He has five for 58.
It's the 50-some-odd, it's a 51-yard play that helps get them back in that game against Baltimore. He totes the rock 51 yards, most of it yards after catch. He has that ability, and Johnson's not producing.
Nope, and you're not getting anything out of Ray Davis either.
So,
even my thing though on that, you know, Ray Davis going in on third downs, his rushing attempts 2, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1. When he's in the game, a defense has a pretty good idea. They're not running the ball here.
They're probably not running it here. Yeah,
and that's its own issue where you don't have guys now getting open on the offense. And now on third downs, when, let's say, 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6, a high leverage situation where it's not 3rd and short, but certainly not 3rd and long, it all really needs to complete a pass here. The defense, where your whole advantage on offense is they have no idea what we're doing. They have to react to what we're doing. But they see number 4 is not out there and they go, they're probably not running it. They're probably not running it. Third and four, a situation where maybe with Cook, you do, because you're going to set up a 4th and 1. If it doesn't work, they're probably not running it because Ty Johnson's in the game. You're giving them a bonus all because you are somewhat worried Cook is not the greatest pass blocker in the world. I don't know. In my head, he can't be that bad that you're giving away some of your hand to the defense.
It's like rookie Lamar Jackson when they would just throw him in for like wildcat scenarios. And it's like, oh, they're running the football.
Yeah, obviously, right before he gets the starting job over Flacco, they would bring in that package, but the package never involved him like actually keeping the ball and throwing it.
Yeah, it never involved him throwing the football. So it's like, okay, cool, sure, whatever. You're telling the defense what you're doing. And like, it's one of these things where, like, yeah, Cook's off the field on that last drive. Why?
What was it? He didn't have another touch for like the last 11 minutes of the game. I think, what was that?
Stat?
Yeah.
And it's like, don't overthink it sometimes. And that comes back to the too cute thing, which then comes back to scheme. Joe Brady's been fine. He's far better than his predecessor. But yeah, there are cracks in the armor right now.
I like that you brought up Bobby Slowick. He's a fun name to bring up. I mean, the guy's fired. Better words there. But
But he is sort of that example of 1 year he is thought of as it's him and Ben Johnson.
Yeah.
Kind of neck and neck. Who's your preferred flavor kind of deal? And then last year, Johnson takes off. He's still as awesome as he is. Detroit's still
continues
awesome.
Continues on.
Continues on. Where, and I think it's fun to bring this up because Mina Kimes of ESPN mentioned, I think on Monday or over the weekend, that this was the first time she was finding out that Bills fans had somewhat turned on Brady on social media, which, of course, is sort of an echo chamber. It doesn't mean everything. And I'm not saying everyone or even we have turned on Brady.
Because she tweeted out, Titans coach Joe Brady. Bills fans, look away.
And every Bills fan was like, good, thanks. Like, thanks for service, leave. And, yeah, most Bills fans have accepted Brady's probably gone this year, whether through happy circumstances or not. But Slowik is sort of that cautionary tale of 1 year you're at the top. And Sal brings this up a lot, where you kind of take the jobs when they become available. You don't know if you're going to get another shot at this.
Right.
You know, Houston, a lot of their problems maybe just is offensive line. And Slowik couldn't figure out how to work around that, which is very difficult to do.
And that's probably the correct take on it.
Mm-hmm. But he was at the top of the mountain and stumbles down until he's what now? Like, I think the passing game coordinator in Miami, and it's his current role right now. I'm not saying it's going to happen to Brady, but yeah, now there's two instances in back-to-back years where with Josh Allen, your passing attack really kind of just faded away. And it takes an Amari Cooper trade. We'll see if it fixes itself this year. I have a feeling it will, because this is what happened last year.
Yep.
It's, again, for me, a lot of this is looking ahead to January, looking ahead to the end of the year when they're playing their best football. I imagine they'll figure it out. I imagine they will beat Carolina off the bye because they're very good off the bye. And they're very good in December. My thing is January. It is going up against teams like the Chiefs and, you know, now the Colts and Denver. And going up against those very good defenses, do you have enough to go up against?
Teams that have complete rosters.
Yep. 803-0550, again, the number to call. Want to give your thoughts on what the Bills need to do to right the ship, get this whole thing figured out while they're on the bye week as they take on Carolina later this month, October 26th, down in Charlotte. We go now to Tom on the line. Tom, how are we doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
I
was just listening, and I loved your terminology using cracks in the armor.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to back up a little bit. So if you're a realist, right, so we've been Bills fans forever, this team was very good last year. They lost at the end, you know, and then the GM says, hey, we got some cracks in the armor. That's what I'm just going to say.
Mm-hmm.
We need to spend a lot of money on we got to spend a lot of our draft picks on defense because we don't get to the quarterback enough. And oh, by the way, we wanted with this everybody eats thing. We think it works because we're scoring 30 points a game, and we'll sign Elijah Moore and, you know, Josh Palmer because we lose Cooper, and hopefully things remain the same, right? And then we start out this year, and oh boy, for the first four games we are Super Bowl favorites, Tony Romo and Chris Collinsworth, and everybody's like, these are the best team in the league. And then we lose to the Patriots. And so now it's like, okay, blip, blip, blip. But I don't think people were talking too much about cracks in the armor until now, when people are like, oh boy, the Falcons, we have a problem. We have a problem now. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the same problem, whether it's next week or in January. Right. So I'm also a January thinker. And, you know, I always come back that we can't have, you know, 10% of our salary cap on injury list or whatever. But my point is, we still, in my opinion, have the same problem. So I really agree with your approach. So we need to try to find what we have. Right. And so, in my opinion, on the defense, you know, when you get, I really, really believe, if you get a pass rush on, I almost don't care how good your secondary is. That's how good much of a pass rush happens. So hopefully this idea of people getting healthy, you know, gives a pass rush, and it fixes the obviously glaring holes of one corner and both safeties. Obviously, I don't think it's a surprise to anybody over in one Bills drive. On the offensive side, I think you can't I like the idea of trying Tolman elsewhere, but you can't just do that in a game, right? You got to make sure you practice it. And why would you practice it when you've been successful up to this point, scoring 30 points a game, unless you turn over the ball three times? So one thing I'm doing, I can tell you one thing I'm doing besides now saying, okay, I got a problem getting people open. One thing I'm doing is I'm saying, this is going to sound so silly to you, but this Brandon Codrington instead of Elijah Moore or Curtis Samuel on who we're going to make inactive on Sunday, that's got to go away, because Brandon Codrington, it was a nice idea. He's done nothing for me. So now you got to say, all right, in my opinion, you got to be playing both Samuel and Moore, right? You got to have every single possible weapon at your disposal to get open, and hopefully somebody's having a good day. But I personally think if this is a long-winded answer, how would you do up the trade deadline? I think the reality is you got to find somehow a deal like you got with Cooper last year, where you didn't have to pay a lot of money, so you could get him under the cap. Mm-hmm. But you upgraded your receiving core. So that's where I am. I don't know that I go make a trade for safety when, you know, my blitzing linebacker is hurt and my defensive line is in shambles. I'm like, literally, they're getting hurt in pre-games and, you know, getting stepped on. So I got to wait to see what I got there before I make a thing at safety. Maybe address it in the draft. So it was a very long-winded way. So I agree with a lot of the things you say, but I'm sort of thinking, if I'm a Bills guy, this probably hit me pretty hard, this Falcons loss. Like, I probably wasn't thinking things were as bad as they really could be. So anyways, that was just my opinion on the whole thing, and thank you for taking my call.
Tom, thanks for calling.
And
I think it's also a right way to look at it. Like, it punched him in the mouth, but they are still 4-2.
It is the right way to look at it, I do think, now we got to see what you're made of. You've been smacked around now 2 weeks straight, heading into the bye week with a terrible taste in your mouth now.
Mm-hmm.
But to that point, the pass rush. I would like to agree, but I don't trust this general manager to get a pass rusher right to save his life.
That's been kind of his big bugaboo. I mean, like, look, Landon Jackson, third round pick, kind of can't get on the field. You know, TJ Sanders, who they trade up for in the second round because of his pass rushing acumen at the defensive tackle position. He was a non-factor before he was put on IR. Deion Walker was absolutely lapping him in terms of the big play pop they were looking for. Not to say TJ Sanders was terrible, but in terms of the big play pop, which is what you're trading up for in the second round, you weren't getting any of it. And I just don't know about trading for a pass rusher. I don't really know, you know, the names that are necessarily going to make it go, especially when you do have Michael Hoyt coming back.
The ones that you want are not available anyway. And I hate the Cleveland Browns for offering so much money to Myles Garrett that he signed that deal.
But then we'll still say, yeah, it's getting tiring losing. I saw that last week and I was like, whatever, man.
Yeah, no, like, I don't feel bad for him, but I feel bad for me.
Right.
Because that was the dream. Mm-hmm. Was it not back in March?
Yeah.
Or not in March, in February?
In February. Actually, yeah, like right around the Super Bowls when he...
Right around when he demanded the trade?
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is fantastic.
Here we go.
Give me this. I'm eating. And then Cleveland's like, how about we give you $40 million a year instead? And he's like, okay. And I'm like...
Why not?
It's the antithesis of what you're doing.
But also, I get it. 803-0550, the number two call. We've also got some hockey talk coming up at 2:30. Travis Yost will join the show. The Sabres winning 8-4 last night for their first win on the season. And we'll be back in action again until Saturday at home against the Florida Panthers. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, filling in for One Bills Live today and tomorrow. And this is WGR. Hour number one continues to roll along here. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, filling in for One Bills Live. The Bills are on the bye week. We're doing that today and tomorrow. Bills are next in action October 26th.
Correct.
Sunday.
10 days away.
The Carolina Panthers, who sneakily 3-3.
Not even sneakily anymore. I might say with how they've been playing recently, impressively.
Well, on that for me, they are playing some pretty bad defenses, and they are performing very well against them.
What are the Bills?
I know. I'm so excited to see Rico Dowdle.
I'm not. Not at
very,
all.
Very, very actually dread how that will go.
Actually dreading it, as a matter of fact.
More on the defense, 803-0550, the number two call. We go to Lou all the way out in Denver. Lou, how are we doing today?
Pretty good. How are you guys?
I'm good.
We're hanging.
I wanted to talk about safety because I heard earlier you were kind of pegging that as the worst positional group on the team.
Yep.
But and I know Brandon Bean loves his draft picks, but they're being in Denver, I've watched a lot of Bronco football, and they did not want to part with Justin Simmons. They got caught up in that Russell Wilson salary cap mess and had to let him go. He's only 31, going to be 32 in November. He's sitting on his couch right now looking to play for a contender, which I would assume the Bills would be high on that list. But he has 6 career picks of Mahomes, 4 in the red zone. No one else in Mahomes' career has more than 2 picks on Mahomes. And he would be, I believe, a big upgrade to either safety position. Because let's be honest about the coverage abilities of those two safeties, Rapp and Bishop. That's, I would have to say they're two of the worst coverage safeties, and as a tandem, worst coverage safety tandem in the league. I can't think of a worse tandem coverage-wise, but he would not be that expensive, and I've seen him. He is definitely a huge upgrade in coverage.
Yeah, Lou, thanks for the call. I know he's a name that many people have brought up, even going back to last year.
For a couple of years, because he had the 1 year deal.
Because he waits a long time. Is that due to him wanting to play for a contender, like Lou brought up, or is that more teams looking at him and maybe not really wanting to go down that route? I will say he played almost the entire season for Atlanta last year, I think playing 16 games for them. The problem is, though, Atlanta then didn't sign him back and instead drafted 2 young safeties to go along with their 2 edge rushers they drafted. They really put a lot of resources into their defense, including trading up to draft that second pass rusher. I always wonder about Simmons, though, because he was such a great player and seemingly overnight stopped.
Suddenly being, lost interest from the league.
Yeah, stopped being the all-pro player. The league kind of decided he wasn't going to be it. So there's always going to be this sort of blind curiosity. I'm going to put my hand up now. I didn't watch much Atlanta football last year. I don't know if he was a problem for them or they just want to get younger. I have no idea.
My bet is they did want to get younger because they drafted not one but 2 players that could play safety in Xavier Watts and Billy Bowman. Bowman has been playing corner for them,
right,
but they still drafted 2 players that were listed as safeties. And Bowman, in particular, was a safety that had a pre-Jeff Rizzo with the Bills.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but that's the thing. Maybe Simmons is perfect and he's just kind of waiting on his couch waiting for a team to be like, baby, we need you. And he's like,
baby,
I'm on the way.
What a quote.
I'm on the way. Maybe that's right. And to be fair, I think Bishop and Rapp really just together are a bad mix. They're oil and water. I don't think they work
together.
It's
not even oil and water. Lou brings up, you know, the coverage abilities there. This is the same problem as last year with a different name.
Right.
One name is the constant.
It's Rapp, yeah. But Hamlin and him didn't work well together either.
Because they're box safety physical types. Bishop has more athleticism, I think, and probably could be molded a little bit more into being the player they should be putting deep. Rapp should not be the guy that's playing the quote-unquote free safety type.
Mm-hmm.
No, he's a box safety through and through, and there's a reason he's late. It's because it's not his game.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. We are late to a break, so after paying some bills, we'll be right back filling in for One Bills Live today. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer. This is WGR. Hour number 2 rolls along here. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer filling in for One Bills Live today and tomorrow. Talking, well, the upcoming trade deadline for the Bills and what they need to do, where they need to fix their team, where they actually can live without fixing. You know, what can you hide? What can you live with? What do you have to live with? I think it's a curious conversation because I think either way you go, offense or defense, I'm not really going to fight you on it. I can understand both sides. For me, with the offense, you got the all-world quarterback in the last 2 playoffs. You've ended by not scoring the football. You've had the chance. You just haven't been able to do it. And you've had to kind of go to the well a few times
and yet at the
to
same
bring
time,
in a wide receiver to add to that room.
And yet at the same time, the most recent playoff loss – was the first time that the Chiefs had scored more than 30 points all year.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened against your team. All again.
And that has been a constant in the playoffs, is that a top 15-plus unit all year goes in the playoffs and they can't get timely stops. They're not getting the takeaways that they sort of live by. And to be fair, you're also seeing that these last 2 weeks, when they're not getting the takeaways, all of a sudden that bend don't break defense looks like it's breaking pretty easily at times.
It's breaking a lot more consistently than it used to. And
in many ways, it's bad penalties. It's the lack of tackling. It's a few things. I look at it a lot, mainly on the defense, a talent issue. However, with it being an offensive league, I think you can somewhat survive with a less than stellar defensive unit, especially with, we don't know what they'll look like when Hoyt and Ogunjobi are inserted back into the lineup. We've only had Ed Oliver for 2 games, and he has 2 sacks in those 2 games. He's
not a mistake at this point.
You're also seeing more of Deion Walker, and he keeps ascending. Not perfect. He did well in the run defense, and they were still bad.
But that's the thing, is like, especially with that game against Atlanta, Oliver and Walker have to do, like, it's a workman-like performance. And yes, they do get gashed. But you're playing 3 defensive tackles all night.
Yeah.
79 and 80% snap share for each of them respectively is tough.
Yeah.
For a defensive tackle, so tough. Like, your job is running into people right away and, like, fighting with them the entirety of your game. That's mm-hmm. your game. You need a breather.
Yeah.
And, oh, my God. Like, it just, it's one of those things where, like, even, like, offensive linemen, like, the pass pro thing, like, you, like, they get to kick, step back and everything. Like, you're engaging with players. But if a play eventually goes away from you, offensive linemen don't have to continue running. Defensive players, you should keep running.
Yeah. And to be fair, when you're Walker 6'7", over 300 pounds, it's a big body to move a lot for that night.
It's a lot of snaps for that. Mm-hmm. And they did a lot of work. I really commend the two of them for the performance that they had, especially with Walker having 4 tackles for loss in that game, in a game where they do get gashed. But I mentioned,
he also batted a pass down at the line.
Timely stops, though.
Mm-hmm.
Walker and Oliver were both putting those up in the second half and kind of spearheading. This sounds familiar for Ed Oliver, spearheading an opportunity for the offense to take over.
And unlike opening night, the offense doesn't get it done.
Correct.
And so, and you can even go back to that AFC Championship last year. The Bills do hold Kansas City to a field goal. The offense has a chance to go win it. And instead, it has to be ultimately a prayer ball situation from Allen to Kincaid. I mean, Kincaid probably should come up with it. I'm not denying that. But he's running around, and it kind of has to be, you know, throw it up in the air. Let's see what happens.
But also,
it almost works. But
also, I loved watching Cam Newton's breakdown of that mm-hmm. play. It's Steve Spagnuolo out-coaching Joe Brady in that moment, because they line up in a way where you have to identify the mic as Drew Tranquil, and the corner is going to be coming off. But you have to identify that mic because he is your closest threat.
Yeah.
Tranquil drops, corner blitzes, he's hot, and the Bills don't have a hot route for it. Allen does what he can, extends the play, and puts it in Kincaid's neighborhood.
That is almost so cool. Seems to be a continuing problem, though, of not having a hot route with a blitz, just getting the ball out. A little frustrating. 803-0550, the number to call. More of your thoughts on what you want to see the Bills do to maybe right the ship as they're on the bye week. They are still, though, it can be said, 4-2. And they are still in a pretty good spot, all things considered, after dropping 2 straight games. Though they are now 2nd in the AFC East. We'll go back to the phones here. Mike is up first this segment. Mike, how are we doing?
Great. Great show. Always enjoy listening to you guys.
Thank you.
And thanks, I know, Mike, you were just talking about it, but I noticed that in the 4th quarter, maybe even in the late 3rd,
mm-hmm.
Walker was coming out every 3rd down, and they were going to Solomon. And I understand, you know, trying to snap count, playing with only 3 tackles. But he might have been able to push the pocket to help an edge rusher. He might have been able to knock down a pass, or maybe he might have been able to actually come in for a sack. So maybe couldn't once or twice when 3rd down leave him in there. And the number 2 point about that is, You're taking the guy off the field after, first and second, running him off the field, and then when the opponents convert, which they always do, you're running them back on for after third down again. So it's like, if it happens four times, you're making your defensive lineman, who's probably one of your most effective pass rushers, he's doing cardio. He's running 200 yards extra wind sprints to get on the field. So I just wish that we had a little bit more next-level coaching where they say, hey, let the kid have a chance on third down. He's penetrating. And after the game, McDermott made a point of like, well, he made some big mistakes and really learned some lessons tonight. And I said, well, I wish Bobby Babich would learn a lesson to be like, change it up a little bit. Give a guy a shot on third down, especially a guy who's been one of our – I mean, I think he's been one of the top three defensive linemen. I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the call. He's been one of the better defensive linemen in the league, especially when you look at rookies at his position, defensive tackle. He's been kind of awesome from the word go for the Bills. I mean, you remember in camp as well, Bills offensive linemen were being asked, like, who's been flashing, like, before they could even get the word out. Deion Walker. And who coined it? Was it Ed Oliver that called him a dancing bear? I mean, like, the team has loved him from the word go. I think I understand where Mike's point is on that, though, of it's third down. Maybe just keep the guy in there who's been playing really well to try to get off the field rather than maybe playing the long game there.
That's circumstance.
Right.
I'm not going to really harp too much on that one because, again, he played 80% of the snaps.
Yeah, he's already playing pretty much all of them
anyways. He's probably dogged.
Yeah.
A singular breather, even if only for a play, that is 40 seconds of being able to at least get some water, breathe some air, and have a moment.
You do wonder, too, with how well Daquan Jones is playing this year.
I think
and you get Ed Oliver back, if he doesn't pick up an injury game starts.
Yeah, if Daquan Jones is not hurt in warm-up, that scenario does not happen, Mike. It's you get to rotate him in. You probably do put him in on third down, actually. Like, that's probably the opposite. Daquan plays first or second down. You get Deion Walker in there on third down. As a matter of fact, let him try to pin his ears back. That one is just what I'd call unfortunate circumstance and what was probably the weirdest week in terms of pre-game injuries.
Because you had two in the Colts game.
Two in the Colts game. There was one in the Bills game. It just all sorts of everything. And then also, like, whatever is happening with Josh Simmons with Kansas City.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, like, pre-game shenanigans, I guess I'll call it, to where you can't do anything about that other than go, hey, let's get him a breather if we can. Get Jordan Phillips in here. At least get him a chance to take a moment. 80% of the snaps for a defensive tackle is high.
It's very, very high. And I think it should be important to bring up, at least for a few more weeks, it's like his sixth NFL game. So I think they also don't want to put too much on a rookie now where maybe he blows a play and because he's tired, Bijan's off to the races again. And the slow march that they're having to try to come back into the game falls apart. But I will say, throughout the year, Deion Walker has been the shining light, not just on the defense, this draft class as well. Jackson Hawes has been great in his very specific role for the offense, and that's been awesome. But in a draft class where your first-round pick is injured and you haven't seen him yet, and you haven't seen him for months now at this point. It was early in camp when he gets hurt. TJ Sanders also got hurt, but really wasn't doing much. And Landon Jackson, only recently, kind of due to circumstances, getting a game day jersey, but when he's playing, he's not doing anything. Walker has been the shining light to that class and has been at least been something positive. And I remember us talking towards the beginning of camp going like, look, I'm not expecting too much from Walker or Sanders. It'd be unfair. Because they're rookies and it's a second and a fourth round pick, they've got to work around the vets and it's got to be a symbiotic unit. Walker has spat in the face of that and has instead been a guy where we're all sitting there going, can he play one tech? Can he sit next to Ed Oliver?
Can he be next to Ed Oliver?
And cause hell, and in your first taste of it, while you're still waiting for potentially your best run defender to come back in Michael Hoyt, it was a really good sign. I know they gave up a lot in the run game. And that's not ideal.
It's also, my thing is once they get past the first level, it's
that's where the damage is really getting
ugly,
done.
It gets ugly, actually.
That's where the damage is getting done.
And so I went ahead and I got curious about something. I was like, let's look at defensive tackle snap shares because he is a rookie who was coming off of a back injury, by the way. So, yeah, playing 80% of the snaps for the first time in your career is going to be something. And I looked at it and I'm like, okay, who's a player that I can look at this year to see snap shares? Who's a good defense tackle in this league? I thought Vita Vea. Big boy.
I was going to say very similar body builds. Yep.
Big boy. He has played 80% of the snaps twice this year.
Okay.
But he's also an established veteran in this league. But even he is not getting over 80% commonly.
It is probably much more close games. We need our best players in there.
Oh, they play a lot of close games.
Tampa's been in a lot of close games.
That's kind of just been what they do. Braden Fisk.
Yep.
Last year with the Rams.
For Rams, yeah.
He was a fantastic addition for them. He has yet to play even 70% of his snaps in any game this year. It is something you want to have a healthy rotation at defensive tackle. So, again, I think we went on this point long enough, but I just wanted to be able to show the fascination on this. But it's not commonplace to have two D tackles playing 80% of the game.
No, and it happened because of a strange circumstance. And I thought they would have. I know Nate Geary's talked a lot about this, especially in the post game and when he does overtime as well. Greg Rousseau, who did a lot of work at the University of Miami in the interior, I thought there was a good chance that maybe they would move him there.
Right.
To Daquan's out. We need to do something, and they kind of never did.
I think that's also based on Greg Rousseau is supposed to be really good at setting the edge,
and we need him against Bijan.
We need him there.
Right. Let's go back to the phones. Rich is up next. Rich, how we doing?
Doing good, guys. You know, my biggest problem with that last game and the team overall is, look, it's Brady, all right? Babich had an injury-riddled defense. He's, like, putting things together with duct tape and barbed wire. He's got, you know, I love Trey White, man. Great person, but he is a shell of himself. And in the second half, making adjustments – basically just shut Atlanta down and gave the offense multiple opportunities to win that game. The one person I'm really pissed off at is Brady. He came in with a crappy game plan and then made no adjustments at halftime to address the blitz. I don't ever remember seeing any type of hot read or a dump off or, you know, getting Cook into the passing game. Like I said, Bean, this guy needs to be held accountable. I think he's been given a free ride for too long. Draft picks have been questionable. Free agency has been questionable. And I'm sick and tired of this organization putting the entire weight on Josh Allen by going to the bargain aisle to go find wide receivers and not giving him any talent to play with. You know, Mahomes has plenty of weapons to go to. And yet, poor Josh Allen is stuck back there. It's like, hey, Josh, if we get blitzed, you need to run. Hey, Josh, we got crappy receivers that can't get open. So you need to force balls into small windows, and if you get picked off, it's your fault. You know, I'm sick and tired of Bean getting a free ride, and I think Brady needs to pull his head out and start coming up with some better game plans. Thanks, guys.
Rich, thanks for the call. Rich fired up today on a Thursday. I understand the sentiments, though. I have been somebody that has talked about Bean's misses in the draft, especially free agency. I get a little leery of once you pay the quarterback big money. Then the drafts become that much more important because it's cheap labor. It sounds awful when you put it like that, but that's what it is.
You need to find your ways to exploit when you are paying a quarterback that salary. You need to find ways to properly recognize the bargain bin and succeed there. Mm-hmm. But you need to, more importantly, get stars through the draft. This is something you and I have started to get on this a decent amount of time ago now, where it is about the lack of stars and superstars that are drafted to this team outside of Josh Allen and James Cook.
Mm-hmm.
It is mostly good to great players who are now kind of like, you know, a little bit of a decline going on. Like, I look at Taron Johnson.
Right.
He has not been good this year.
No, and he's his size has become a problem the last 2 years. He often gets bullied in those matchups.
And it's just one of those things where he's not the all-pro corner that he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at the lack of a star defensive end. Von Miller is signed, and it was working until he got hurt. But outside of that, what have you added at defensive end that has really sold me on him, on Bean's draft acumen on the defensive line? Well, this is a guy who brought Trent Murphy in. People don't forget.
But like that's where you bring up Greg Rousseau, like you mentioned, like edge setter. But they signed him to a deal that the expectation was he was going to take last year, and we talked about this on the Extra Point Show a lot. He looked to be an ascending player. Yeah. A lot of the underlying statistics really liked Rousseau. However, you know, we also kind of pointed out, a lot of his sack though production, funny enough, was in week one against Arizona. He had kind of like an Ed Oliver game. He has three sacks, dominates, looks – there he is. Here comes the all-pro year for Greg Rousseau. He goes like six games without another sack.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of picks up to
– Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit detecttheSOS.com today to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here, wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
The end of the year, but he has his worst game at the end. But it made sense to sign him back. He looked to be an ascending player. He has not been that so far this year.
Right.
AJ Epenesa, while his pressure rate is very good, he's kind of a nice secondary piece to have. Every team's going to need him, but he can't be your second best pass rusher.
But the
right?
defensive ends, mm-hmm. for the entirety of Bean's tenure here, have been secondary players or chip in.
Well, I brought this up. I don't know if I've said this on air, but I know we've talked about it. Since 2019, he's drafted one Pro Bowler. And I know it's the Pro Bowl, but for a team that wins 11 to 13 games every year, you'd think fans would know their players and would vote them in. I'm not saying Bills fans. I'm talking nationally. Their one Pro Bowler is James Cook. Now, they've had a few more that have pieced in, like Connor McGovern's a free agent acquisition, but he's an alternate. Deion Dawkins is not a bean pick.
Right.
And even that offensive line they had last year, you'd think maybe their young ascending guard, Osiris Torrance, would get some call for that. Spencer Brown. No.
Nope.
And so that's my biggest issue. It's not necessarily that Pro Bowlers mean everything. It's not that. But it is a way to look at how they're drafting, how they're adding talent, and they haven't done it, specifically at the edge rusher position. But as you mentioned, the safeties, Taylor Rapp is supposed to maybe be an heir apparent to Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde. He has not been that. Cole Bishop, we're kind of waiting to see on that. Cornerback with Christian Benford. They signed him to the extension. He has not looked good this year. Most of their contract extensions have not looked good this year.
He played better against Atlanta, against Drake London. Mm-hmm. But yes, you're right. Like, and safety is another thing. Like, those additions, they're McDermott's.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. We are going to take a little bit of a break from football talk as the Sabres had a nice win last night, 8-4 over Ottawa. It's their first win on the year, and boy,
also known as outscoring the Ravens.
Yeah, and boy, did they make up for not having a lot of goals in their first three games. We'll talk with Travis Yost coming up next. Get more on kind of the start of this year and maybe what this win means for the Sabres going forward. Their next game is on Saturday at home against the Florida Panthers. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer filling in for One Bills Live, and this is WGR.
Sabres will park it in behind Levi Marilainen, who turns it over. Here's a chance. Oh, and Marilainen doesn't have it. Here's a shot. Scores! Tie game! McLeod ends up with the puck and buries it in the back of the net, and we're tied at two.
Dan Dunleavy there on the call. One of two Ryan McLeod goals from last night. And McLeod was one of three players to have two goals last night. He, along with Jack Quinn and Jason Zucker. The other goal scorers were Alex Tuck and then Yuri Kulik buried an empty netter. It was very much a night of many celebrations for Sabres fans. I was in the building last night. The crowd was very, very good for a midweek game, especially for a team that was 0-3 going into it. They danced around potentially losing it.
They did mess around with that to open the third period, and a well-called timeout by Lindy Ruff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not to be hyperbolic, probably saved their season.
I think almost definitely.
The second period they had, if you choked that.
Job.
Yeah, but also think about context of how. If you had a second period like that and then you choked it, there are things that are unforgivable. That's one of them.
8-4 win for the Sabres. And for more on the start of the season, especially last night's win as well, we go to the Western Hotline. Travis Yost joins the show of TSN.
Travis, by the way, last time I talked to you, we had tons of dreams of like destinations for players to go in an off season. Sadly, Travis, those remain dreams, unfortunately.
One day the dream's going to be I'm coming up to play for the Sabres in Buffalo. And it just doesn't seem like that dream is here today quite yet, but maybe around the corner.
None of the league had fun with it either, Travis. Like, everyone took the fun out of our ideas, and I'm still mad at the league for that.
$17 million is hard to say no to.
Yeah, I know, it's one of the better ones.
So, Travis, last night, I think maybe... I don't know, you've seen some Sabres fans. Last night, going into it, the vibes have been very low, obviously. The team was 0-3. They can't score on the power play. Everything looks bad. And while it is only one game, and it is against Ottawa and a backup goalie, man, that felt, I think, for a lot of us, very cathartic to see.
To say the least. Mm-hmm. I spent the morning on Twitter or X or whatever it's called. I was watching a little bit. I watched a little bit of the Mammoth game last night, and I was watching Paterka, and I'm mm-hmm. like, man, he just fits seamlessly into this lineup. Made a comment like, I think Utah's going to win out on this deal. And honestly, like, that was not a negative point. And I've made, I don't know, 2 trillion negative Buffalo Sabres comments in the last 10 years, but this wasn't one of them. And yet I had to spend 2 hours defending myself. Like, hold on. Josh Jones, a great player. Kessel Ring, he's getting into the lineup. Like, TBD, could be a win-win type trade. But, yes, I could tell literally from 2,000 miles away that the pressure cooker is on max velocity, and they needed last night. I watched that game. I watched the replay of the game this morning against the Senators. And, Ottawa has a backup goalie in net, but that's still very much I think Ottawa is going to be on the right side of the playoff curve. They're certainly not defending like a playoff caliber team mm-hmm. right now, but that's a fairly talented side over there that Buffalo took care of. And so I don't think there's anything to rinse away with an 8-4 win over a otherwise game team. It's not just the frustration of the many years and the rebuilds and we're looking just for anything to sink our teeth into. I mean, to start the year, not just to go 0-3 off the rip. I mean, what were they outscored 10-2? I mean, they weren't really even competitive games. And, you know, if you're a diehard Sabres fan, you watch the first few games, you're like, what am I going to be doing in the middle of January when, you know, Bill season's done, it's in the peak of winter sports, and you're staring there and you're like, well, I guess I'll throw the Sabres game on. You want to hope that they're at least in the playoff race and not, 15 games in trail like they typically are. So I last night, one step in the right direction. I think they got Florida next up, a tall order to say the least, but let's see if they keep this thing moving along.
Travis, I mean, you mentioned like Sabres fans looking at January. I was looking last night with a twinkle in my eye, Auburn and Oklahoma State playing an exhibition game in college basketball, going, baby, we're right around the corner. We're right around the corner. I mean, I think for many of us, it really was needed. And something I liked last night too, of course, scoring on the power play is big, but it wasn't necessarily that the big stars were the one, putting the puck in the net. It wasn't a 4-goal game from Tage Thompson where you're like, yeah, he's awesome. But the rest of the lineup I'm concerned about. Like Benson in his first game of the year, 4 assists. I think it took him like 8 or 11 games last year to get to that total. Ryan McLeod has 2 goals. Like it felt like it was more the depth of the lineup was able to do it, and it didn't need to be the top-end stars to get it done for them.
Yeah, 100% agree. And not only that, I think just the inherent scoring touch. I mean, you score 2 goals in 3 games. That's dire. And outside of the New York Rangers, few teams have really been stuck in the mud offensively, quite like Buffalo. So it was nice to see the big offensive outburst. And yeah, Maryland is a backup goalie in Ottawa, but again, you're still playing a respectable team. This is not San Jose. This is a decent draw. I think the one thing though that I come back to, and yeah, 4 games is 4 games. Even calling it a tiny sample size is probably an overstatement. I do want to though. The one thing that I'm curious about, over the last couple of years, especially 2 years ago when the Sabres really felt, I don't want to call them good. They were not good, but they were certainly competitive and definitively competitive at 5-on-5, where I at least for Sabres fans who are at peak frustration like Trav, give me any reason for hope. What I would always come back to is, okay, well, the most important game state, which is 5-on-5, the Sabres have actually been a pretty competitive team, and typically that is not just a good indicator of how you're doing today. It's a very positive indicator of, future wins, how you stack points in the standings, whether you can reach the playoffs, because relying on an elite power play or elite penalty kill, it's too volatile, right? So you want to win those 5-on-5 minutes. And the reason I bring that up is the one thing the Sabres have not done this year is win those 5-on-5 minutes. And I think maybe to your point, some of the core players, not Alex Tuck's line, that line's been fantastic at 5-on-5. Even to start this year, but there have been some pretty, top of the lineup players on both sides of the aisle, like the Rasmus Dahlin pairing, for example, has been outscored 5-2 to start the year 5-on-5. Like there's pockets. Tage Thompson's been outscored 4-1 5-on-5 to start the year. There's pockets of this lineup that you would have expected, even for an otherwise, mediocre or slightly below team, considering their track record and the fact that they have been able to skate with most of the teams in the league at 5-on-5. Bit of a slow start there, something I'm definitely watching. You don't know how much the goaltending factor plays in here, because the Sabres, I think it's fair to say, are not well situated in net right now. And I do think that's going to be a headwind that challenges throughout the year. But the one thing I'm eager to see kind of through the rest of October, November is can the Sabres kind of get in a rhythm here at 5-on-5? Because if nothing else, that really has been their one core strength over the last couple of years, and we haven't seen it to start this year.
Travis Jost, TSN, here on the Westsur Hotline. Sabres 8-4 last night against the Ottawa Senators. You mentioned Alex Tuck, though, a couple times here, Travis, and it looks like those talks for a contract extension have been put on the back burner. The words from Tuck's agent, Brian Bartlett, that we've just put it on the back burner. They were hoping to get a deal done before the season. Getting back on track probably has to be the most imperative thing in order to retain Tuck and keep him as a core piece going forward.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, when you're 6'4", 220, and you produce like a second liner, you can just basically, I don't want to say name your price, but pretty close to that, especially with the way the cap is expected to move to the upside over the next few years. And, Tuck, he's a Syracuse native. Like, I'm sure there's things pulling him to stay in Buffalo. I don't think that's dead, far from it. But, the other side of that coin is if you look at Tuck's career, right? I mean, the guy went from a historically as good as it gets, winning franchise in Vegas, to, okay, closer to home, enjoying his time in Buffalo, but we're getting close to the finish line of that current deal, and I think you hit the nail on the head. If the Sabres brain trust and coaching staff can't give Tuck some real indications that this team is rebounding in the right direction, there's obviously going to be a fear that this is a player that could be lost for nothing. And yeah, he's 29 years old. He's probably in the peak right now. You're probably paying for diminishing returns going forward, but where exactly and how exactly do the Sabres replace a player the caliber of Tuck internally? I think that would be quite the stretch, at least on day one. And there's clearly an appetite from the organization to keep him retained. It's going to cost them a pretty penny. One of the other side of the coin that the Sabres are unfortunately dealing with, when you have a great team, and I'm not a big believer in that, you know, these teams that are in no income tax states have a massive advantage. I actually think the underrated or less talked about advantage is players signing friendly deals with teams because they know those teams are well run and always are contending for a title. That matters to players quite a bit. And if you're a team like the Sabres, you may have a promising forward outlook over the next few years, especially with the way that some of these prospects are coming into the lineup. But if you look at their 10-year, you know, backwards-looking trajectory, you may have to pay a bit of a premium to get a guy to sign with the Sabres right now, because the magnetic effect of, oh yeah, come here and win a title, that's not something the Sabres can really sell right now. So obviously a pivotal year for the Sabres across the board this season, but certainly pivotal in terms of how it informs whether or not Tuck is going to stay long-term.
One of the bright spots so far to start this year, because the Sabres are only 1-3 last night, albeit was great, but they did start the year 0-3. It was not due to a lack of goaltending, though, Travis. Alex Lyons looked pretty darn good to start. It really has been the offense, but for a team that's sort of been the calling card of what's been going wrong, they just need goaltending. Lyon, at least I think to many of us, has looked pretty good. What have you seen from him?
I mean, he's been fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing with Alex Lyon is, and this is not to diminish Alex Lyon because he's in the league, right? But these journeyman-type goalies, there's probably 10 or 15 Alex Lyons around the league in any given year, and you're trying to catch lightning in a bottle a little bit, right? I mean, if you look at Lyons' trajectory or his track record, you know, he played decently with Philly, played decently with Carolina. I mean, he's got the hallmark numbers of a backup goalie. And, you know, if you're Buffalo, you're just hoping just once can we get a bounce from a guy, you know, who might give us 30 or 35 games over the given season, but he can stop 91% of the shots faced. I mean, if Buffalo can get that from Alex Lyon, I mean, they're kissing the ground that he walks on because of how dire the goaltending situation has been. I have to say, obviously, it's, you know, we're talking about four games here, and any goalie can look great or horrible over a four-game stretch. But no doubt, they have been respectable increase to at least start the year, which is, I don't know, orders of magnitude further along than I thought they would be. I remember when I was doing every summer in August, I grade the depth charts of every single team. I grade the wingers, the forwards, the blue line, the goalies, every single depth chart. It's actually self-informative in many respects, helps me understand how the puts and takes of offseason, how teams are set up to enter the year. And I thought the Sabres had one of the most interesting dichotomies you could find around the entire league. I graded their blue line as, I want to say it was a tier one or tier two blue line, one of the six or seven best in the entire NHL. But goaltending, I was having a really hard time not putting them dead last. And it's not that they would necessarily perform to dead last this year, but there was very little to give you confidence that this tandem that they were planning on icing had big upside or big potential. You're basically hoping and praying for respectability. But to your point, and what I think Lyons at least brought in the early parts of October, is they're getting okay goaltending. So now the pressure and the burden and the onus shifts on the rest of the skater group. For many years, that group's had a valid excuse of the goaltending's awful behind us. Going 1-3 with this caliber of goaltending behind you in 2025, I think the Sabres lineup's a little better than that. So I think it does leave you wanting for a little bit more in the win column right now.
Travis, going around the league now, and kind of referencing back to our last conversation when, you know, dreams are only dreams, Connor McDavid picked the fun option. Only a 2-year extension in Edmonton. The pressure cooker for the Oilers organization is going to be incredibly intense over these next couple of years here, with McDavid only agreeing to a 2-year deal.
There's no doubt about that. And I think that was, I don't even, I don't even think there's much up for debate here. McDavid clearly made three points when he signed that deal. Number one, I'm going to give you the cap flexibility to add, and I'm going to take a heavily discounted deal to do it. Number two, I'm putting you on notice that, hey, look, you have heard me publicly many times over, like any, you know, elite championship-minded player, I am frustrated when we fall short, and we have fallen short, and we have fallen short not because of anything that I'm doing offensively or my team's doing offensively. It's all in the back end. It's all in net. It's all in the crease. And you guys need to figure out a way to shore things up. And I'm giving you a two-year notice or a two-year runway to get it done. The third piece, which is the harbinger, is, well, what happens if they don't deliver a winner or title or contender? It's, you know, it's interesting from a human standpoint, right? Like, every person calculates this differently, right? Some people are overweight. You know, I want to live where I was close to home. Some people are overweight. I want to get away from home. Some people say, I want maximum financial security. Some people will say, I want the best odds of winning a title. Let's not lose sight of one thing, though, in McDavid's interest here. When you've got, let's say, two sigma, three sigma confidence that the cap is going to be moving to the upside as aggressively as it has been, especially considering how flat it's been over the last 5 years, and you're a player the caliber of McDavid, even if you had won a Stanley Cup in Edmonton, there is probably a good argument that, you know what, you can name your price whenever you want 2 years from now, so why don't we just do this year to year? It's exceptionally, exceptionally uncommon in the NHL for a variety of reasons. But you have started to see this with real high-end blue-chip talent in the NBA. You know, guys like LeBron, Kevin Durant. Some of these guys have not signed the classic $200 million Supermax contracts. They'll sign the one-year $40 or $50 million deal and reload the chamber the following year. And the idea is, one, I'm bullish and confident that the league is going to grow from a cap standpoint. Two, I'm going to cash into it. And three, if I am, I'm in my late 20s, early 30s, and I'm really championship hunting right now because I know I'm at the peak of my career, I want to see what that landscape and that setup looks like. And, even though McDavid may have taken the fun out of the trade viability this year, I still am a believer that we will see. We saw a couple of them last year. I'm still a believer we still have real potential of seeing big-name trades over the next couple of years because of that same cap wrinkle, right? News came out today, Artemi Panarin and the Rangers do not sound remotely close. And I'm still on Sidney Crosby watch. I know he re-upped with Pittsburgh, but, the Penguins, whenever they want and whenever Crosby, gives them the signal, they can move him, restock the cupboards in a blink. He goes chasing the championship. You know he's going to sign the retirement deal back with Pittsburgh anyway. Let him go chase the title. Let Pittsburgh restack the cupboards. I think there's still a few very interesting names out there, but at least right now, McDavid doesn't seem like he's one of them.
And we'll see what happens in a couple of years there, Travis, because that's where the real chaos will begin, like you said there. But unfortunately, I'm up against the clock here. I'd love to talk hockey more with you all day here, Travis, but we got to get going and pay the bills. But thanks for coming on. Always appreciate talking with you, and we'll do again sometime soon.
All right, take care, guys.
That's Travis Yost, TSN on the West Hurrah Hotline. I got to get to break here and get things ready for Chopin Bulldog at 3 o'clock here on WGR. Last hour here of Kramer and Jones, last segment. Until we're back tomorrow, Zach and I will be in at 1 o'clock. Thank you to Travis Yost of TSN talking hockey with us in the last segment. Thanks to everyone that called, by the way. Appreciate talking with all of you as we've had ourselves a fun little afternoon. The fun keeps going, though, because Chopin Bulldog will be coming up next. And right off the rip, they're going to have Dan Shulman on. So I'm going to make sure we get ourselves out of here in a timely manner. Why? Because I am dedicated to the clock. For Zach Jones, I'm Derek Kramer. This has been Kramer and Jones. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll see you later.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS.
With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.